Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an update on the Mueller inquiry now that Trump's former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn has pled guilty to lying to the FBI and is cooperating with the special counsel. Scott Horton, a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security, joins us to discuss the emails leaked to the New York Times that shed light on how much Trump's transition team knew about communications and active involvement with the Russians that are illegal under the Logan Act, which prohibits private citizens from working with a foreign government against the United States. We'll assess how much jeopardy Jared Kushner faces since he lobbied members of the UN Security Council behind the back of the US government on behalf of Israel, and whether Trump ordered Flynn to contact the Russian ambassador and Vice President Pence knew about Flynn's activities. Then, with Trump now tweeting criticism of the FBI, we will speak with Usha Rangappa, a former FBI special agent who specialized in counterintelligence investigations, about the role of the FBI's about the central role that FBI counterintelligence played in revealing secret contacts the Trump transition team was making with the Russians and others, and how the acting attorney general at the time, Sally Yates, was fired for warning Trump based on evidence from FBI counterintelligence that Flynn was compromised by the Russians. We will also examine what Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, KT McFarland, meant when she wrote to Trump's top advisors about how Trump should pay back the Russians by easing sanctions because Russia, quote, has just thrown the USA election to him. Then finally, as the Republican so-called tax reform bill makes its way through conference towards an expected signature by the president, we'll look into how this massive reward to the donors will further embed and entrench an American oligarchy, while the 99% who have not had a raise since the late 1970s will be left paying more for less of their share of the American pie, and will soon see their social safety net cut in order to pay for the deficits caused by the Republican $1.5 trillion gift to the oligarchy. An expert on American and global oligarchy, Jeffrey Winters, the author of Oligarchy, joins us. And joining us now is Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He served as counsel to Andrei Sakharov and Elena Bonner, among other activists in the former Soviet Union, and serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. Welcome to Background Briefing, Scott Horton.
Ian, great to be with you.
Well, thanks for joining us. And Scott, now that the big shoe has dropped, that General Michael Flynn, who was Trump's most senior and I think longest serving advisor, and had a very short tenure as his national security advisor, but was probably the closest aide to Trump during the campaign and the transition, has basically pled guilty to the FBI for lying, to the special counsel for lying to the FBI, and has admitted that he's now cooperating with the special counsel. Let's start with these emails that were leaked to the New York Times, obviously by somebody on the inside who had a bird's eye view of what was going on during that transition. What do these emails tell you about the depth of complicity here, particularly people like Vice President Pence, who have some illusion that they're immunized because they claim that Michael Flynn lied to them, but evidence is mounting that most of the inner circle knew exactly what Flynn was up to?
Well, remember the immediate pushback that was put out by the White House in response to the plea bargain and the headlines that it grabbed came from Ty Cobb, his lead counsel, and the thrust of that pushback was to say, Flynn's all out there on his own. He was doing this on his own. This in no way implicates any other person in the White House. And I think, you know, you have to wonder sort of what's going through the mind of the people who leak this. I mean, the people who leaked it had to be in a position of confidence inside the White House to have had access to all these emails. And what they're doing is basically putting a big stamp across his statement that says, liar. That's just not true. Because these emails demonstrate that Flynn, they basically make clear that Flynn is exactly what we've always understood him to be, a military man who understands his position and the chain of command, and who doesn't go run around doing things without checking them out with his superiors. And in this case, very, very clear, he was taking direction continuously from higher-ups and the staff. And his position was so senior that there are not a lot of people who were higher up than he was on these issues. But in particular, we see, and the documents that were submitted by Mr. Mueller cite two individuals who've been identified as Jared Kushner and K.T. McFarland. And so we know they're implicated. But K.T. McFarland is particularly interesting in that she was the deputy of General Flynn. So in no way was she giving instructions. Rather, if we understand what her role was inside the transition team, she was the person who was assigned to keep Trump company at all times and to be a conduit between him and the rest of the foreign policy team. So I think the strong assumption is that these messages that were being communicated by K.T. McFarland to Flynn were coming from Trump himself.
Well, K.T. McFarland has an extraordinarily thin background in national security. And she, of course, worked for Fox News and was the conduit for Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch to General Petraeus when he was serving in Afghanistan. She went to him as an envoy of both Roger Ailes and Rupert Murdoch, basically saying, we will back you, Fox. Rupert will pay for it, and Roger will run your campaign against Barack Obama in the 2012 election. And here you have a sitting general working for his commander-in-chief, Barack Obama, being told by K.T. McFarland that the kingmaker, Rupert Murdoch, wants him to run against his boss. Now, that, of course, that whole conversation was leaked, presumably by perhaps even Petraeus himself to Bob Woodward of the Washington Post. But that doesn't speak well, does it? I mean, of her, at least to my mind.
No, and indeed we know since Flynn was out and McMaster came in, we know McMaster wanted to have nothing to do with her, wanted her out immediately, didn't trust her, and thought that she was involved in some very questionable dealings that were going to explode. He tried to appoint her to a number of different positions. She's in the dock to be ambassador to Singapore, to be far, far away from Washington. And I think, there's certainly a deep story behind this, but I think the information that was published in the New York Times on Saturday helps us understand what he was so concerned about, because amongst other things, we have that email in which she's saying Russia threw the election to Trump.
Right. And it's time to pay back. Right?
Exactly.
Ease the sanctions. I mean, if that's not clear to all these extraordinarily resistant conservative Republicans and liberal Democrats, for the life of me, I do not understand, still insist that there's no there with this Russian investigation. What more evidence do you need? I mean, this is an extraordinary admission on her part. Hey, guys, it's time to pay Russia back because they threw the election in the USA to Trump.
I think that's right. And it also helps us understand the meeting that was going on with Kislyak in different terms. So we have a lot of people pushing back now saying this wasn't a violation of the Logan Act, that it was free and clear. An incoming president has the right to have such meetings and have such discussions. It's just a matter of policy and a shift in policy. In fact, we have Andrew McCarthy spelling out this line in an article in National Review that was published yesterday. But I think this email and a number of other things put this in much broader context. And I think what we're looking for is evidence that there was, during the campaign or potentially even before the campaign, a quid pro quo bargain that was struck with the Russians which is you help us be elected in various ways. Hacking is and release of the hacked materials is one, but it looks like money, you know, just direct payment of money to Trump or through other sources into his campaign to support it, or to his business empire to support it, was another source. And there was a quid pro quo that included an agreement to change the sanctions regime, probably to recognize Crimea, and to pull back on support from the government in Ukraine, amongst other things. So, you know, if there was such a quid pro quo bargain, and her emails certainly suggest very strongly that it existed, and that Trump post-election is trying to send a message to the Russians that I'm going to make good on what I promised you, that puts the whole thing in a different context.
And again, I'm speaking with Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. Well, it's so extraordinary that when you just mention money coming from Russia, either to the campaign, the Trump campaign, or to Trump's businesses, that if you see this whole operation as it, which is what it was, which is a very multifaceted Russian intelligence operation, which both the GRU and the FSB got on board, the SVR, foreign intelligence, were pretty leery of it. They thought there'd be blowback, as Putin's chief of staff, General Ivanov, a former KGB general, very much Trump's, very much Putin's superior, thought it was a terrible idea, and Putin fired him. But he went ahead and did it. And if you just look at one aspect of the many, you know, the DNC hacked and all the other stuff that they did, particularly the digital stuff with troll farms and bots, etc. If you just go to one aspect of the Russian operation that's mentioned in the Steele dossier, and that is how they recruited Jill Stein and the Green Party, and she was on RT all the time through the election period, and she managed to get more votes in those three swing states than Hillary Clinton lost by. So just that one aspect of Russian involvement put Trump over the top. So the idea that keeps being put out there that the Russians weren't decisive in this election, I find that really ridiculous.
Well, I agree with you, certainly. And I think the Steele dossier is really getting as much intense scrutiny from journalists now as it's ever gotten. And that's largely a result of facts coming in that just show it was correct on so many different points. Now, I'd have to pause and say there are also quite a few points on which it hasn't yet been stood up or refuted. But there are now a very large number of points on which it is, it's come through. And I think certainly the reporting on Jill Stein is a piece. Also, a lot of the business dealings with Trump, which he vehemently denied, and subsequently his denials have been exposed as false. And the report of that dossier that he was, in fact, pursuing deals. He was pursuing deals involving and the exact Russian financial institutions that Christopher Steele cites. All that's coming through. In fact, I point out that I think that we're going to be seeing in the next week on NBC a major show reviewing all the Steele dossier reports and itemizing what's been proven, what's been refuted. Actually, I don't think anything has been refuted, and what remains to be established one way or the other. That should be coming in the next week or so.
So, what's your sense then of whether or not this is, you know, Ty Cobb, Trump's lawyer, keeps floating this idea that the Mueller inquiry is about to wrap up, and it's obviously not the case. It would, if anything, they're just hitting the ground running, and this is the first phase of it. And there are, you know, three sort of threads here. There's the follow the money thread. There's the political operatives thread, and then there's the digital thread with Jared and Bannon and the Mercers, etc., and the Russian troll farm. So there are many threads to this, and we're only seeing one part of it in terms of Flynn's cooperation and what that might lead to. So why is Ty Cobb doing this? My suspicion, Scott, is that Ty Cobb is preparing us for Trump's intention to shut down the Mueller investigation in, you know, before the end of the year by basically saying, well, you know, it's supposed to be over. In other words, they've set an artificial deadline, and he hasn't, you know, he's going past the deadline. He's just wasting our time and our money, so let's can him.
That's exactly correct. And in fact, we know that Ty Cobb reached out to the Republican leadership in the Senate and the House and spoke to the heads of the investigative committee. There are four committees that are on this in some way or another, and got three of the four to come out and make public statements to the same effect. That is, that they were going to be winding up their report at the beginning of the new year. It was completely obvious at this point that there was no way any conclusions could be drawn about this, and the thing couldn't just remain open forever. So this was all designed as a strategy to pressure Mueller to wrap things up, and also to justify a decision to shut him down, which could be by defunding the operation or an issuance of a new order by the Attorney General, fixing a deadline by which everything had to be done. But this effort has collapsed at this point. So we have, Senator Burr, who is probably doing the most important of the investigations right now, has already come out and said, he had been thinking of shutting things down at the beginning of the year. He's not going to do that now because it's obvious that things will continue to go. So I think Mueller, by bringing these rapid-fire charges, and this is an extraordinarily tight time frame in which to bring charges of such gravity, he's established that the case has established important initial objectives of demonstrating that there's something there, and he's established also within sort of broad markers what remains to be investigated and established. And I think we now see that, you know, we're looking at a period certainly of several more months, certainly through the end of the winter and into the spring, before we're going to come to conclusions. But I'd also just stress, there's never been an investigation like this. There's never been an investigation that has moved as quickly as this one has, nor an investigation that has achieved so many striking successes early on.
Well, just in closing, Scott Horton, when they keep talking about the Logan Act, and many say, well, you know, it hasn't been even enforced since the 19th century, so what are we talking, why are we, it's an antique gathering dust. It would seem to me that there are other, from what we've learned so far from this Flynn and his cooperation with the special counsel, aren't there other contemporary laws that they're much more in jeopardy facing? For example, the laws on campaigns that they violated?
Exactly right. So I think we do have a pretty clear-cut violation of the Logan Act, but there's never been a prosecution under the Logan Act. So I wouldn't expect that he would bring charges under the Logan Act. I think he's going to focus, once he's developed all the facts here, and he's established that there was a large-scale program of intervention and support for Trump, we're going to be focused on campaign and election finance regulations, which make these things clearly illegal, and which have teeth in terms of offering a basis for prosecution. And we've also got, you know, the old standbys of, General Flynn discovered, making false statements in the course of an investigation and other acts of obstruction generally. So we have all these procedural things where there's a very, very solid basis to act. But I think it'll be a combination of election finance, and procedural matters that will figure as the investigation proceeds.
Well, Scott Horton, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Great to be with you.
And again, I've been speaking with Scott Horton, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing editor at Harper's in Legal Affairs and National Security. He serves on the American branch of the International Law Association and has represented a variety of journalists and whistleblowers. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into Trump's outburst of criticism against the FBI and speak with a former FBI special agent who specialized in counterintelligence investigations.